to the communication of a perceived trusted authority figure. Indigenous people understood that by watching the animals. And by doing that, they realized that they could take control of it, so they weren't hypnotized by others.
So there's an interesting dynamic between projecting authority or embodying authority, and how that is, as you suggested, it can be done in a positive and negative ways.
And being the self-authority, say, I have the authority to be able to do this with the help of all the facilities that are surrounding me and in me, and I'm going to go into that state and imagine it. I mean, Einstein said imagination is more powerful than knowledge, and all the phenomenon of hypnosis is believing deeply in an image, the carefully constructed image that is positive, while in a lower brainwave frequency. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be in a deep state. I've had my appendix taken out with just being in an alpha state. So this is just one of the things that we see in traditional indigenous cultures who were able to optimize their individual potentials via ceremony, via going out into the world and using all their resources of the right and left hemisphere.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area to explore. And there's different terminology that can be confusing for different people about it.
Oh, but yeah. 70 different words, you know, inner mind training, all this stuff. And also it's put down, all the Abrahamic religions put hypnosis down as of the devil. There's places about making spells in the Bible that have turned people off it. There's been a lot of Hollywood misdirection and confusion. But ultimately, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis.
That's the first part of my interview with Darshan Narvaez and Wahingpe Topa, also known as Four Arrows. They were both raised in our modern Western culture, but later returned to the wisdom of their native ancestral traditions. Both have written extensively about native indigeneity, and together they've written this wonderful book we've been talking about, Restoring the Kinship Worldview, Indigenous Voices Introduce 28 Precepts for Rebalancing Life on Planet Earth. And that's it for this Magical Mystery Tour. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in again next week to hear the rest of this interview. And if you missed any of it, or would like to hear it again, or would like to share it with somebody, you can find this and all Magical Mystery Tour shows at soundcloud.com/WGDR. And until next time, take good care of yourselves and each other.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Tyco Farm Fest on Sunday, August 28th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Triskley Farm in West Lynn. Portland Tyco blends traditional Japanese taiko drumming with dynamic choreography and storytelling. That's Portland Tyco Farm Fest on Sunday, August 28th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Triskley Farm, 29700 Southwest Mountain Road in West Lynn. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Be sure to stick around, man. We got another great show in store for you. We got a lot to talk about this week. You know, we were able to take a week off. We had to tend to some birthday festivities.
Whose birthday?
That would be my birthday.
Which birthday?
That was my 40th.
Okay, talk to me.
Yes, sir. So I was moving around the world a little bit. Had to go to Egypt and bring it in the right way. But
around the world a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it was fun. But a lot of things happened since we last were able to create a show for you. And so we're going to spend some time talking about a few things that have made the news in our absence, and do our best to bring some context and some light and some deeper understanding for those of you who know about them, and to inform those of you who don't know about them. So again, a lot to stick around for, news related. Also, we're going to be talking about really how these things feel, the second part of the show. How does it feel to have to handle these I don't even know if micro traumas is the right way to describe it, but you know, these we'll call them micro traumas, why not, we can do that, and how to process them, because if you get news like we get news, then maybe, you know, it can be a bit overwhelming. So we're going to spend some time talking about that. For our Baba segment, Becoming a Better Ally, we're going to talk a little bit about the NAACP, how you can support and where your dollars go. And then for our Way Black History Fact, we're going to discuss the history of rhythm and blues. We've been on a musical kick here lately, and we don't want to stop it just yet. So stay tuned for all that and more. But first and foremost, like we always do at this time, let's discuss some Ebony excellence.
Shall we?
We shall. This week, it's brought to you by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and the story comes from Afrotech. We're talking about someone who Q knows very well, a woman by the name of Allison Felix. So the quick and dirty version of the story is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Q, she was sponsored by Nike, and she ended up getting pregnant, and Nike kind of backed off. They didn't want to honor the contract or wanted to change the terms of the contract or something like that. In fact, I'll read a bit of it. But the long and the short of the story is that she ended up moving away from Nike because they weren't supporting her in a moment when she was vulnerable. As we know, Black maternity, maternal health is a big issue because the outcomes aren't always consistent. They're never consistent if you're Black with that of our Caucasian sisters. And so Nike abandoning her prompted her to start her own thing. So we're going to kind of touch on that a bit. But here's a quote from her. She said, one of the areas of fulfillment was her footwear brand, Saish. She launched it in June of 2021. The venture was created for women and by women and considers all facets of life, including motherhood. Saish was important to Felix to spearhead, as she learned firsthand from her exit with Nike in 2017, that even one of the most popular apparel companies failed to prop up pregnant female athletes and new mothers. And it's not lost on us that she is a black woman. She's currently running in the Olympics in Japan, wearing them under the banner, I Know My Place. And I think that's something that was said to her from one of the Nike executives, Know Your Place. So she used that as a positioner for her company. So once again, shout out to Allison Felix. You indeed are Ebony excellent.
Allison, I'm super proud of you. Kenny, Allison, and Cameron, I love you all very much. Keep doing your thing, and we're going to keep supporting.
Yes, indeed. All right, moving on. Whew, a lot of headlines. Big shout out to our show producer, Maggie B. Nolan.
She do.
we had a lot to wade through to get this show together. And so, there's been a lot coming at us from a lot of different directions. The first story that we're going to talk about is a story that we've touched on repeatedly here, has to do with Breonna Taylor. And this story comes from the Justice Department. The headline reads, former Louisville, Kentucky police detective pleads guilty to a federal crime related to the death of Breonna Taylor. I'll read a bit about this. So the Justice Department announced today that former Louisville Metro Police Department detective Kelly Goodlett, age 35, pleaded guilty in federal court to conspiring to commit two federal crimes. Goodlett admitted that she conspired with another former LMPD detective, both to falsify an affidavit to obtain a warrant to search Breonna Taylor's home without probable cause, which resulted in Taylor's death, and to cover up the false warrant by lying to criminal investigators after Taylor was killed. Whew. Now, if you were alive in 2020, you know that our community demanded that the cops that murdered Breonna Taylor be arrested. And that has been a long fought battle. That train has been moving very slowly. And, you know, the wheels of justice oftentimes do turn very slowly. But this is something that we're happy to see, but it also kind of causes us to stop and think, right? One thing that jumps out at me, of course, is that we know Breonna Taylor's name. We're familiar with her story. There are so many people whose names we don't know. So many stories that do not make national headlines. Black people, as you know, are overrepresented in the criminal justice system, as we are overpoliced and unfairly sentenced. But when you see things like this, I believe our position, which oftentimes looks like, hey, the odds are stacked against us. Doesn't matter if we're 100% squeaky clean and we're, you know, a first responder, as Breonna Taylor was, and we live a life that is as right in terms of being on the right side of the law as anyone else, that this system can beat our door in and find us, try as we might to hide from it. This story shows us that there are behind the scenes factors and people that create the cancerous corruption that makes its way into our lives. In other words, this woman falsified documents, then lied about it, but we're just talking about falsified the documents necessary to set off this chain of events resulting in her death. So yes, she's just as guilty. And the fact that she pleaded guilty to it, it helps, because oftentimes what we see is that people don't plead guilty. They plead innocent. They, you know, it's a long fought trial, and then the judge hands down a light sentence. And this is why we have to ourselves affirm that Black Lives Matter, because Breonna Taylor, if you can hear us today, you were not born to die. That should not have been your story. That should not be anybody's story who's endowed with consciousness. But for us in our community, it seems very often that we have to affirm that, because things like this happen both right in front of our face and, of course, behind the scenes, as we're seeing in this example here. And this is all a part of a system of people who, at best, don't care. At worst, hate us. Sound like you seem like you got something to say, Q.
It's more about having something to feel than something to say. Because I thought what you just said a bunch of times before.
Yeah, that's right.
But hearing it orated, it was different.
Yeah.
Right? At obvious is what I would say, hate us. Not so obvious, could care less.
Right.
With a smile on their face, kind, well-to-do people who live out their entire lives just not giving a damn about the outcomes that we live with on a very, very regular basis. You know, the Attorney General in Kentucky, just proudly with a smile on his face, campaigning now for an increase in pay and an upliftment in political power, saw no reason to even pursue anything beyond, you know, I guess what he considered to be a thorough investigation of the officers involved in that crime. And at his campaign rallies, he's reminded of his failure. I won't even say he takes it on the chin. He just pretends it's not happening. Not even decent enough a person to acknowledge and or apologize, because how dare we ask for or require or expect some sense of accountability from him. It's tough reliving our realities. And like you said, that young lady was not born simply to be murdered in her sleep, in her home, doing nothing wrong, for reasons that someone created falsely,
manufactured out of thin air,
and then perpetuated after the fact
the lie to then cover up what they'd done so that no one would be held accountable, which is what we talk about more on this show than anything else. I think people sometimes take our stance as we'd like the same awful things that happen to Black people to happen to other people. And it's quite the contrary. When awful things happen to other people, and or when Black on Black crime happens,
it's not a real thing.
When the perpetrators are known and caught on camera, there's an account to be paid. There is a penalty there. And far too often, even when we know the names, faces, jobs, locations, addresses, you know, daily happenings of the perpetrators who kill our people, because they have a badge, they get fired with pay. And as taxpayers, we're responsible for making sure those people still get their salaries for having murdered us.
You get a vacation. You know, I think that that's, and we talked about this recently, but again, this is part of the reason why affirming, why making our mantra Black Lives Matter is necessary, because left to our own devices, if we were to look around and read, you know, the news articles that come our way, or just be alive and conscious, you know, in this country, you might, like oftentimes artificial intelligence excursions yield, you might find that Black lives don't matter, you know, and that Black life is less valuable and is often associated with criminal, you know, these sorts of things. If you didn't know any better, that would be your reality. Just because that's what the world teaches you. Okay, the police shoot these people. Well, why was he running away? Could it be that he was afraid that he was going to die? Or was it criminal in nature? Who runs from the police?
Well, it had this to be
double
criminal.
Standard. Yeah,
he looks like Ramses.
See what I'm saying?
So it was definitely criminal.
So let me add to that. There's a whole other facet here. That the same system that, you know, the front-facing part of the criminal justice system is, of course, the police, have this very, very cavalier attitude when it comes to Black and brown people, which is collateral damage.
Well, their supporters have a cavalier attitude with regards to Black and brown people. Their attitude isn't cavalier at all. It's very aggressive.
Sure.
Very violent.
Sure.
Very shoot first, ask questions
sure,
later.
Sure.
Or shoot first and not care later.
Absolutely.
So yeah, cavalier, I wouldn't even assign that. Because it's very intentional. And it's not just in general either. Like, this is not our imagination. To our listeners that don't have this same reality, some of you, if you've listened to more than one episode of this show, I'd assume that you may think along the same lines as us. But if you're just tuning in, or if you're listening for the first time, or, you know, if you're listening just so you can pick us apart, sure. But our reality is one that is very different from yours.
Mm-hmm.
And these outcomes are very, very, very intentional. It's not by chance. We're not creating a narrative. We're just speaking about a reality that not everybody can see because they don't live it.
I'll take that a step further. Q and I, we speak about our own reality.
Yes.
So let's I want to skip ahead a bit. So there's another story that came out. This one comes via NBC News. Deputy resigns after pulling a gun on a pregnant Black mother during a traffic stop. Now, let me read a little bit about this. You saw the video, of course.
Unfortunately.
A white Florida sheriff deputy has resigned after he pulled a gun on a pregnant Black woman during a traffic stop as her three distressed children watched on and recorded the tense interaction. Ebony Washington said she didn't immediately stop when an officer tried to pull her over in Bradford County on August 12th because it was dark and she didn't want to scare her kids. Dessou followed her That's the officer's name. Dessou followed her with his siren and emergency lights on and ordered her to stop. At one point, Dessou said over the patrol vehicle's PA system, "Pull the vehicle over or I will put you into the ground." The sheriff's office said body camera video of the incident released by the sheriff's department and shared by John M. Phillips, Washington's attorney, showed Dessou shouting to Washington's car, "If you make any movement, that'll be your last mistake you're going to make." He then emerges from his vehicle with his gun pointed at her and yells for her to get out. Washington is seen with her arms out the window of her vehicle. She says the door is locked, and Dessou says, "Unlock it. I'm not worried. I've got my gun on you." All right. Now, to your point, Q, you're talking about the aggressive shoot first, you know, this sort of thing, right? Now, I have to play devil's advocate because we have to do that. We just have to. So hear me out.
We choose to. And it's to
preserve some integrity.
And it's for us to be fair people.
Right, right. So that's, thank you for saying it a little bit better than I could. So an officer catches someone speeding or whatever, some minor infraction, attempts to pull a person over. The person doesn't pull over immediately. So what is the officer thinking? Perhaps this person is trying to flee. Or whatever, you know, they have to be paranoid. They're a paranoid sort, as we know. They you know, my business partner, Sean, he told me guns bring about gun energy, right? This is what he told me. He's not a gun person, neither am I, but that's what he said. So these guys have guns on them. So they're like ready for death at any, you know what I mean? So everything is super heightened, right? This is my assumption. But, you know, they have to be careful too. They want to preserve their own life. Again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, Q. So this person is not being, they're not pulling over immediately. So now you're on high alert. Why is this person not pulling over? There must be something going on here. Maybe it's an ambush. Maybe they're going, who knows, right? Who knows? We don't know. But that's not the point. Just let me paint the picture here. They get to the next well-lit place. And the officer is not at a point where he's wanting to ask questions. So he, you know, pulls the gun out because he doesn't know what to expect. You know, and he's trying to enforce the law best he knows how based on his assessment of the situation. We'll give him all that. Okay. My thinking is that the moment a pregnant woman gets out of the car with her hands up, and she's cooperating, at that point, the threats to end your life, and you can see that this is a black woman, you know, the police, they have their headlights on you. Black pregnant woman emerges from the car. At that point, you don't need that aggression anymore. You don't need that anger, that fear, whatever it is. Maybe your adrenaline's pumping, whatever the case is. But if you are a civil servant, you have to recognize that that same person that you might cite for speeding is indeed someone that you work for, right? Those tickets, that goes to pay your salary and buy you your next tank and all that other sort of stuff too, right? So, you know, one of the things that happened to me, that very same thing happened to me. The thing is, it happened to me in daylight. I shared the story before. I was about 19 years old. I was going to school, got pulled over because I was going to get an inhaler for my cousin. I had to go to the bank and then pull out some money to buy him an inhaler because he couldn't breathe. Police pulled me over. All the police pulled me over. There was a bunch of police. They had guns on me. And they told me to get out of the car with my hands up. I'm told, "If you make any sudden movements, we will kill you. Not we will shoot you, not we will wound you, not we will arrest you, not you'll be in a big trouble, mister. We will kill you." So coming that close with death, I think, justifies her wanting to pull into a place that's well lit and keeping everybody as honest as she possibly can. The thing is, on this show and in this space, and I think to your point, Q, we as Black people have a very different experience. And for us, there is a chance that we could die pulling over. There's a chance anything could happen if we pull over where it's dark. If we pull over where it's well lit, we might have a chance for some justice because there might be a recording of it.
We might not die.
But, you know, if there's a recording, there might be an investigation at least.
We've seen recordings lead to investigations that led to nothing.
Well, you know what I'm trying to say.
So we might not die, if we can get into some light and someone might be recording it, we might not die. The idea that we're hoping that that might lead to justice is just a bit beyond scope of reality. It's not real. That's not, in that moment, we're not hoping I might get some justice. We're hoping, I hope I can get home. And in her case, I hope I can get my kids home and that we don't die during a traffic stop. So I don't want to pull over in the dark where I can't even reassure my kids that everything will be okay. I'm going to be scared no matter what. I'd rather my kids not fall into a panic and or have to watch me be killed by a police officer for whatever the infraction was. Because even if I outrun you, sir, in my car, I don't pull over immediately. I just keep driving. The worst case scenario for you is you didn't get to issue a ticket. So I don't want to hear about how paranoid or afraid you are. You're just hypervigilant and you want to, something punitive has to happen today. And once I see that you're black, this punitive damages are going to be aggressive and violent.
And that's what, that's another point, is that oftentimes with black people, police don't fear the repercussions. So let's just, thought experiment. I'm not even going to flesh it all the way out. Q hates when I do this, but it's important, I think. Let's tell the story that I just told. Tell it to yourself again, but now make this a middle-aged white man.
I don't make these people old.
But doesn't it?
Just, they can just be white people.
Sure.
Ramses has to try to paint the picture of these people being so fragile and docile. It's not just detailed though. It's often middle age and or old. No, that's completely unnecessary. Any age, white person, doesn't have to be woman, doesn't have to be old man, just white. Just white is enough for this interaction to be benign. You were speeding, so here's the fine for that. Have a great day, sir. That's it. And you can even be annoyed at them for pulling you over. Cuss
funny,
them out.
Funny how run
them
works, right?
Run them over with your car.
Yeah, take their gun and shoot them.
That gun will not come out of that holster, not by their hand.
That's crazy.
So let's just be straight. They don't have, this doesn't have to be an old business couple, you know, leaving the country club. No, just a white person.
Well, the point I'm making, and you're not wrong. The point I'm making, though, is that how does the story look to you? You know? Does it look like, well, wow, why did the police officer pull out their gun? The lady was clearly just trying to pull over somewhere that was well lit, you see? And the way the news and the right, of course, frames their conversations is very different if the person who was trying to find the well-lit area is white. If it's a black person, it's like, well, you know the law, the lights come on, you got to pull over, you know? And if the person is not black, then it's like, well, we understand. No one wants to pull over in the middle of the dark. You can't see anything. Of course she's trying to get, you know what I mean?
And this lady, so she slowed down.
Hazards on,
and
yeah.
And turned her hazard lights on to signal that, hey, I see you.
Yep.
I'm cooperating.
Yep.
I'm not speeding off.
Yep.
I'm maintaining this distance. I'm just trying to get somewhere where I won't be as afraid, and therefore my children won't.
I give myself the best possible chance. I did that very same thing on a freeway. I told this story too, in front of the airport here in Phoenix. They wanted to pull me over, and I was all the way in the left lane. And if I got to the right lane, I was going to miss my exit. And I was like, I don't know this freeway, so let me put my hazards on and drive slow. And they were just as mad until they found out I was Ramses Jha from the radio. So I lucked out with that one.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
He is Ramses Jha. I am Q Ward, and you are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Stick around. We still got a lot more show for you. We're going to touch on a few more of these topics. And then we're going to discuss how it feels to have to wade through all this stuff. Because if you are one of our non-melanated brothers or sisters, and this is your weekly dose of an alternative reality, it might not be overwhelming, but a lot of this stuff feels very personal. It's very triggering. It reminds us of stories we've lived through, as we've mentioned. And so we're going to discuss that a little bit as well. Also, we're going to spend some time talking about the history of rhythm and blues. You know, we talked about the history of house music, its black roots, That go to Chicago and to a very specific drum machine and some gospel samples and some disco music. But now we're going to talk about R&B. And first, though, we're going to talk about becoming a better ally, Baba. So we've asked many times for you to consider donating to the NAACP. Of course, you can always donate to Civic Cypher, but the NAACP is a very, very old institution and they fight battles on fronts that we are just not as effective with, you know, on those fronts. They go behind doors, they do this sort of stuff. Well, we're going to let you know some of the things that your dollars go to and ask again that you continue to support the NAACP. So we got a letter from them recently and it says as follows. When we say the NAACP is fighting to end racial inequality, these aren't just words. Our work tackles every corner of American life, from clean drinking water to fair legislative districts. And thanks to our grassroots community, the NAACP has the power and resources to advance equality on not just one front, but on all of them. Here are just four of the many issues we're fighting in our work for true racial equality and freedom. Inclusive economy. After generations of discrimination, investments in communities of color are vital to closing the racial wealth gap. We're working with elected officials and private partners to provide resources to Black businesses, implement a federal minimum wage, cancel student debt, reverse racist housing policies, and more. Police reform and criminal justice. Our criminal justice system is shaped by biased policing and unfair judicial precedents. After securing the executive order on police reform this June, the NAACP is pushing to go further. Now, voting rights and democracy. More than a century after the right to vote was declared a fundamental right that's under attack. Since 2020, the NAACP has challenged anti-voter laws in over 10 states and is mobilizing 2 million activists to ensure Black voters are informed and Black voices are heard. And then finally, environmental and climate justice, which disproportionately threatens the health and livelihoods of communities of color. So again, the NAACP could always use your support, and that is how you can become a better ally. Now, back to these mini stories. There is a story that we had to talk about a home that, and we talked about this before, you remember this, a home that was appraised with a, quote, Black owner. The price came back at $472,000, swapped out owners with a white owner, and then that home appraised for $750,000. Nathan Connolly and his wife, Shani Mott, say an appraisal company undervalued their home based on their race. Again, that comes from the New York Times. So again, this is something that we talked about on the show before. We had a few examples back then. I remember we had maybe three or four examples. And those examples, you have to bear in mind that our content for this show comes from reputable news sources. So this made headlines as much as a year and a half ago. And then, of course, this story we're talking about today is a recent headline. So you can see these things are still going on. You can see how these things contribute to economic inequality, which has innumerable factors. And it influences Black life in immeasurable ways. And we're just talking, again, about one facet. Can we get the fair value of our house? You know, the same building. Same content, same location. We're just Black and we own it. You know, in fact, not for nothing, if I ever have to get my house appraised, I'm probably gonna use the same trick because it seems like it works. I can get some extra money off this property. But it goes to show you what Black life can be like. You know what I mean? And how do I say this? So there's something that we say, we have to be twice as good to be good enough, right? Something like that. Effectually, this is what is said in Black circles. We have to try twice as hard to get half a chance. These sorts of things. This is part and parcel to our experience. This is sort of something that illustrates exactly what we're on about. Let's say we have a goal that we want to have $1 million to leave to our children at the end of our lives. You can very easily see that, yes, we have to be twice as good, you know, to matter in a world that is not really set up for people like us to thrive. We're still human beings. We're still endowed with the same consciousness, the same intelligence, the same physical attributes and qualities and, you know, so forth. But there are systems in place and prejudices that exist in corners, either conscious or unconscious, that work against us in our efforts to be all that we can be, right? And the fact that this show exists to illuminate those things is a testament to the fact that people need to know about it. Because if I was not telling you this, there's a good chance you would never know what happened, especially if you're not a Black person or a Brown person. These stories perhaps don't make their way into your life. And that is, I believe, the biggest tragedy of all of this. It's because I do believe that if you've listened to me, if you listen to Q, if you listen to Maggie, I believe that you want to be a good person, perhaps. You want the world to be a bit better place. Otherwise, why listen to this content? And this might be the first time you're hearing something like this. And this is every day for us, right? So one of the questions that we wanted to ask, or that you know, our producer wanted us to ask, is that is it okay that we feel like this? So I'm gonna throw that one to you.
I mean, the quick and easy, straightforward answer is no. Is it okay to feel this way? Of course. Is it okay that we feel this way? Absolutely not.
I like that.
It is grossly traumatic. And we have to spend a lot of time kind of pretending not to be traumatized.
Thank you.
Because we'd be constantly angry. If we actually thought about our reality constantly, we'd be mad a lot. And an interesting thing about us doing this show is that we're reminded of our reality far more often than really everyone else that we know.
Yeah.
So we have to spend a lot of time. I have to spend a lot of time trying not to be overtly angry. And I think that's why I'm the least optimistic half of Civic Cypher, or third of Civic Cypher, right? Because like even some of the things that the NAACP is fighting for, like I'm reading that stuff, like you guys can't really think this stuff is ever going to happen. Like you can't. Like this country's going to be more financially equitable for us. Like, is anyone paying attention to the entire history of not just this country, but the world, right? Like we speak about what has become an absolute environment for us everywhere, right? Anywhere on earth that's been colonized, which is about 80% of earth, racism exists because the colonizers were white. White Europeans, almost always. Europe is what, 6-7% of the earth, 8% of the land mass on earth. They've colonized 80%, right? So we try to think back throughout history about the ideas that, well, any people with power would have, no.
Just one group.
Yeah. For the history of earth, has sought to go as far away from where they're from to take everything from everyone else.
Let me add something right here, if I may. So I have to, just so that I'm doing my job as good as I can, I have to subscribe to some far right racists, pro-white content, because I need to know what people are thinking about. I need to know what conversations you, our listener, are subjected to when you go back home and have to interact with your grandmas and grandpas with their Trump hats. You know, I need to know what's going on in those circles and do my best to try to give you information to where you are armed when you are confronted with these detached realities that your people might subscribe to. And one of the things that I find And it's important that I share this with you. One of the things I find is that, you know, a lot of times in these rooms on the internet, these places on the internet, that white, oftentimes men celebrate the fact that they are these conquerors. They are these great conquerors, right? And I think it's really important to bear in mind that to conquer is, sure, it's something that a person could do. You could wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to conquer someone else, right? It's a philosophy you could have. It's a way of life, right? It exists as a state of mind. And there are so many others. You know, one of the things that a movie we saw recently, Maggie B. Noen and I.
She knew.
We saw a movie about, the old movie was called Avatar, the one with the blue people, the real tall blue people on a planet a long time ago. It was an old movie. We were watching it just because it was on. And, you know, I think that a lot of the characters in that movie, they were based off of like native tribes that you might have found. Yes, here.
A blue indigenous culture. I don't even know, right, what we call them, people.
Right.
That's very specific to us.
Yeah. They were alive.
Yes.
So we'll leave it there. Anyway, but these people, these alive beings, they were not, insofar as I could tell, focused on conquering. That philosophy did not enter into their mind, much like, or at least not conquering to the degree of what we've seen with our European, our brothers and sisters of European ancestry.
Well, actually, not at all of them. We don't have to trade semantics. They weren't interested in conquering at all. Mm-hmm. Hunting, gathering, living, loving.
And I think that is doable. Now, the thing is, a lot of the people that I find in these little corners of the internet, they feel like it's eat or be eaten, kill or be killed. And that is a philosophy. I'm being fair. It does exist as a philosophy, right? Law of the jungle. But I think that as human beings being more evolved, I think that we have the capacity to cooperate with each other and uplift each other and fortify each other. And I think that our tendency over the majority of our time as humans, not Neanderthals and whatever we were before we reached this part, the majority of our time in this current form has been cooperative.
I mean, to say that you're right wouldn't even be saying enough. Like, look over the readings and the ideology of conquerors with regards to the very cooperative people they conquered.
Thank you.
Like, listen to and read about how they speak about our Aboriginal and Native people, mm-hmm, of this country. The people that conquered them made very, very light of how cooperative and accepting they were as they planned to.
So watch this. So for those people who end up on those corners of the internet affirming how great a conqueror the white clan has been throughout history, the rest of us really don't see it that way. We wonder, like, why do you need so much? Why it's like we feel like it's crazy to need to want more than you need. Why would you want more than what you want? You know, there's a tree that grows apples, right? And if I'm hungry, I can go to the tree and take an apple and eat it. I don't need to take the whole tree. I can't eat all the apples. That's crazy. And then the tree dies.
And even if you took the tree for yourself, why do you have to take everyone else's tree?
You know what I'm trying to say? It's the craziest thing. And so I just wanted to offer that. Now.
Before I forget what going to say.
Go ahead.
Racism exists in the entire colonized world.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere does it exist so flagrant and violently as it does here.
Yeah.
So is it okay to feel how we feel was the question.
Mm-hmm.
My trauma starts there.
Mm.
My children are beautiful. I know you think that about your kids too, and you should. But my kids are incredible.
I know he's going to say but.
But they're not going to always be kids. Specifically, my boy. As his arms and legs grow muscles and the sun kisses his skin a little bit more. And if one day he doesn't wear his hair, how it grows out of his head, but he decides he wants to twist it or braid it or lock it, how fast does he go from this beautiful thing to something that, as Ramses would say, scares people? I think that's crap. Until he turns into something that they hate. You don't seek out and destroy things you're afraid of. You run from them. When you run towards them to kill them, that is not fear. So yeah, it is okay for me to feel this way, because how could I not? It is not okay that I feel this way.
Now, I want to get back to what it means for us to go through these stories every week. Again, we have a heavy dose every week. As we've shared on the show before, Q and I often will take turns watching videos where we know we're going to see some trauma. We're going to see Black death or Black harm. And you know, we've come up with a system that we think works for us, but it's only, the only thing we can say is that it works as good as it can. We try our best not to watch everything so that we're not overwhelmed and we don't become desensitized to the loss of human life, in particular the loss of Black life. One of the stories that we didn't get to this week is, and I know that we both saw this one, but this gives you an idea of how heavy this stuff can be. I'm not a soft person. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I am not that, but I am a human being who feels things. I think that's the hardest thing I could say. I'm 40. Somebody would say something to me. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing this, right? We saw a video of some police officers, three police officers, and it was on a man. And it was punching this dude in the face. And the officer grabbed this dude by his hair and he picked his head up. He slammed his head into the concrete. Do me a favor, Maggie, can you find out what video that was? Because I don't have it right here, but like, it's hard for me to even talk about it. Like, it's like, what is wrong with y'all? Why is that? How can you feel good about that? This, even if somebody hurt you.
This person has already been subdued. This person is mounted. This person is laying on their stomach. No weapon, not posing a threat. There are three officers present. One of them has gripped the side of this person's head by the roots of their hair and proceeds to pummel their head and their face into the concrete. There is no explanation as to why that was necessary or how that person, who clearly doesn't have a stable mental situation.
So here's
a peace officer.
I'm glad you said that, man. So these guys, Maggie just let us know that these officers are from Arkansas, and they're on paid leave right now.
Paid
because the
leave,
because the investigation is going on. So
because the video isn't enough,
right?
We saw it. We gotta.
So again, journalistic integrity compels us to tell as much of the story as we know at this point. The officer said that the gentleman that they were subduing, he's the person that initiated the altercation. And that's really as much as I got. You know, and then the video picks up and it's someone just kind of filming the officers. And then if you've seen the video, hopefully we've given you enough if you want to look it up. But I take our word for it, this is not worth watching unless you really enjoy watching people get harmed, which I don't. It disgusts. It just disgusts. Like, it turns my stomach. I couldn't imagine actually doing
it. And it does
that
every time.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't go away. It
turns my stomach every time.
So you can see on the officer's face, as soon as they see that they're getting filmed, because someone's like filming from like the backseat of a car or something. I don't know exactly where their vantage point is, but you could tell they're not close to the officers. They've zoomed in on the officers. And they're watching the officers just beat this guy. Like Rodney King beat him, right? It surprises me that after that officer slammed his head into the concrete with all his strength, that the man didn't die. He picked by his hair, picked him up, boom, right in the concrete. You know that sound that a head makes when it hits the concrete? I know that sound. He did it on purpose. And then they kept beating him after that. Nobody was like, whoa, did we wake up this morning to end a life? Because that's what it sounds like we're doing. Well, Nobody stopped.
What you might have noticed, however, is that when one of the quote unquote good guys intervenes, they get strapped up by their neck.
Sure.
Or by her neck.
Yeah. You've seen that. And they'll do it to police officers too. They'll do it to each other.
There is no equity in being the good guy in that situation. You subscribe to what they subscribe to, or they will make sure that they alienate, harm, at least alienate and harm you physically, and probably and most likely make you a pariah professionally as well.
It's important that we say his name, so we will say his name. Randall Worcester, I believe that's how I say his last name. I know the sauce, so I've always heard it as Worcester sauce. I don't know if I've ever been saying that right, but anyway. Yeah, so Randall Worcester. He's the person who was another recent victim of police violence. And again, we're talking about what it means for us. And we know that even Black people that don't work in a media space like we do might not have to deal with the amount of stuff that we have to deal with. But that amount is still not zero. And their personal connection to seeing Black bodies just like theirs being harmed day in and day out, story after story, over and over again, can be overwhelming. And it's just something that we all need to keep in mind, because it's the sort of thing that makes you want to pull into a well-lit gas station before you get out of your car and interact with the police. There is a real primal fear, not imaginary like we often say happens with the police, a real fear, because again, the police have the real guns. So let's just keep that in mind. Moving on, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. This one comes to you from Hip Hop Weekly magazine. We pulled a story from the Library of Congress. And today we are discussing the history of rhythm and blues. So depending on what station you're listening to, you might get a R&B song after this, or you might have heard one before we started talking. But it's important that you know the history of all the music. Any music with a beat goes back to Africa, because that's where the drum comes from and that's where the heartbeat comes from. So we like to claim all that, but certainly R&B is a little bit more of our modern history. The term rhythm and blues, often called R&B, originated in the 1940s when it replaced race music as a general marketing term for all African American music. Though it usually referred to only secular, not religious music, the term first appeared in commercial recording in 1948, when RCA Victor Records began using blues and rhythm music as a descriptor for African-American secular songs. The migration of African-Americans to urban centers in the Northeast and Midwest during the early 20th century helped to bring various regional styles of African-American music together to influence one another. The migration also created new markets for these styles of music. Early on, the term rhythm and blues was used for boogie-woogie, African-American swing, jazz, and blues. All these styles of music influenced the development of what is called rhythm and blues today. The meaning of the term continued to change over time, and today
It is still used as an umbrella term for many different African-American musical forms. Historically speaking, though, rhythm and blues, as we understand it today, most often describes a style of music that developed after World War I that combines elements of pop, gospel, blues, and jazz with a strong backbeat. The African-American styles that emerged in those years were often played by small groups that emphasized rhythmic drive over the instrumental and harmonic complexity of the swing orchestras. Their vocalists often sang in an uninhibited and emotionally direct style. In major cities, teenage vocal groups with little or no instrumental accompaniment were a growing presence. They took their inspiration from both gospel singers and successful African-American pop stylists. The term doo-wop is well known now, but it was not applied to these groups until much later. And it refers to the vocabs and nonsense syllables these groups sang to compensate for their lack of instruments. All these styles were significant to the development of rock and roll a few years later. Though it began as a general term for African-American music, the synthesis of styles that became what is now called rhythm and blues caught on among a wide youth audience during the post-war period and contributed to changing the racial divide in American society and music of the mid-20th century. Initially, white artists such as Elvis Presley performed and recorded or covered rhythm and blues works by African-American composers in order for those songs to be marketed to white audiences. But the effect was to bring both audiences and artists with an interest in this style of music together. The development of rhythm and blues occurred just as segregation became a growing social issue in American society. Both young black and white people wanted to see the popular performers of the day, and mixed groups of youth sang doo-wop together on the street corners of many urban centers. This provoked a strong reaction of proponents of segregation, and was one reason why rhythm and blues and early rock and roll were often seen as dangerous to America's youth. But with young people of all backgrounds identifying with these new musical styles, a generation was becoming ready for a more equal society. Today, according to Billboard, since 2017, the R&B hip-hop category has been the dominant music genre on the U.S. Billboard chart, becoming bigger than pop and rock. R&B and hip-hop have really come to define modern popular music with a reign that hasn't let up since, growing in market percentages year over year and accounting for almost 30% of all on-demand streams in the U.S. The first half of 2022, the R&B hip-hop variety is still far and away the industry leader, producing new hits and superstars every day. Now, I do want to, on that comes from the Library of Congress again. Now, I do want to mention that this is not just an American thing. The same way that American music and culture was spread throughout the world, later movies, the infrastructure that was built was on the back of jazz music. Jazz is another black art form, American black art form, as is rock and roll. Rock and roll did not start with Elvis Presley. Many folks attribute it to Chuck Berry, and rightfully so. But the point I'm making is that World War I, we sent our troops around the world. Those troops took jazz music, black American jazz music around the world. And then that turned the world onto American music, American culture, and American entertainment. And, you know, how you nowadays see black people's music being exported around the world. That started way back then, and it was through the military, sending our military around the world. And in different parts of the world, it got away from us, you know, but we are here to make sure that the story is told the right way, that, you know, one thing about black people I believe is very true is that we have no problem sharing our culture. What Q and I always say is, we don't mind if you eat from our table,
just save us a seat. And I think that that is, could be said about, you know, Black music, Black culture, elements of Black culture all around the world. We love sharing our culture. We, you know, I've, as someone who's been around the world, Q has been around the world too, to see Black American culture celebrated in places where you wouldn't expect it to be celebrated. It's one of those few things that does give me some satisfaction and a little bit of hope that, you know, again, like Breonna Taylor, we weren't just born to die. We can be beautiful and strange for a few years and enjoy ourselves and smile and raise our children. And so thank you all for allowing me to share the history of R&B with you, because music is something that is, of course, near and dear to Q's and my heart. As you may or may not know, we're DJs and this is our background and we come from hip hop radio. So any chance we can talk about music, we'll take it.
They love our rhythm. They, however, do not seem to love our blues.
Okay, I knew something profound was coming. I had to pause for it, but yeah, you're not wrong there, Q. Anyway, that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You have once again been listening to Civic Cypher.
Show's produced by our producer, Ms. Maggie, a.k.a. Maggie B. Noen.
She do.
Yes, indeed. And do us a favor. Hit the website, civiccypher.com. Make a donation. Shoot us some topics. Let us know what you want to talk about. Of course, you can donate. Our Cash App is at Civic Cypher. So is our Venmo and all the rest of that stuff. The show is growing with your support. This is not free to do, and your support really does count. So please continue to support us, especially if you love the content. And share the show. If you listen to us on a podcast platform, share it with your friends. Make sure that other folks know about it. Download it. Listen to the ads.
Subscribe, please.
There it is. And do all those good things. And until next week, y'all.
Peace.
Yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous.